Welcome to I'll Try That, the beer review and news podcast. Here for all your beer-related news. I'll Try That, the beer review and news podcast.
Here in London.
Ding dong.
I was thinking about this last night in bed.
Smashed it.
Roof is success.
There's a soon-to-be fur daddy.
Another one in the bag.
I'm vetoing that.
This week in the pursuit of hoppiness, we're talking about storytelling of mythical creatures, Wychrud Brewery, and the Hobgoblin. But first, the hop topic.
Hop topic.
Hop topic.
So this week in the hop topic, we're going to be talking about the really big news here in the UK of the Marston's and Carlsberg UK merger. So this is the coming together of the likes of Pedigree and Hobgoblin with Danish Pilsner and Somersby Cider. The joint venture is valued at £780 million, Marston's taking a 40% stake in this new merged firm.
Massive. That's huge.
That's a huge collaboration.
Huge collaboration.
So who is this big for? Like, who is this better for, Marston's or Carlsberg?
I think it's hard to tell. Like, Marston's has been a staple for a long, long time, but they've got quite tired brands. Like, the likes of Hobgoblin have done a new revamp, right? So they have new things, but they have a wider portfolio. Like, Pedigree, I don't know. Pedigree's been around for a long time, but hasn't really seen much investment. So I think what they're getting with the likes of merging with the Carlsbergs of the world is this global presence. Carlsberg, as we know, is one of the biggest distributors of beer. And I use that phrase distributor really clear because actually Carlsberg don't necessarily own the brands of these beers, but they do a really good job of licensing out the distribution rights of their products in different countries.
So it feels like it's going to open a lot of doors for Marston's.
I think it's going to put them on a world stage. I think we're going to start seeing the likes of Hobgoblin in different countries, which we will love to see because we like Hobgoblin. I think it's quite interesting in that this is classic marketing speak or business speak, in that, you know, a spokesperson for this new Carlsberg Marston's Brewery Company has said that they're going to create synergies and productivity benefits.
They are throwing out some very big business words right there.
But let's be honest though, if these two companies make this happen, it'll be huge for both companies. Like, it's not just a one-way street for Marston's. Like, Carlsberg are going to win out of this. Like, it's huge.
And this is big news for the beer world, because it's two different very beer experts would be the way to describe both of them. So I think we could see some new and interesting products or innovations coming out of this.
So I think it's really important to re-emphasize this is Carlsberg UK. This isn't Carlsberg Global.
Oh, okay.
So this is going to be a very regionally specific merger. This is massive for Marston's. It's big for Carlsberg UK. But I think the wider global portfolio probably won't see that. You might see the odd product and the odd brand appear in different markets where that product might be drinkable. Africa is one of the main consumers of ale, dark stout ales. And we know Marston's have good stouts in there. So I don't think it's necessarily a EU thing. I mean, I can't imagine too many German beer, you know, consumers picking up a Hobgoblin and being like, oh, this is so different to something we already have.
Yeah.
So I think really it's about what Marston's is going to get with this Carlsberg UK merger is the potential of being cherry picked into different countries that might actually pick up their beers.
So basically it's the idea that they get a chance to spread, essentially.
I think this is the safety net that Marston has been looking for.
Yeah.
You know, they've not been doing great. As an organization, they've been doing really, really well, but beer sales across the globe are stagnating, slowing down. There are new entrants into the drinking occasions that are taking away from beer as a general category. It is going to disrupt this beer category quite a lot.
If you guys don't mind, pursue it for hopping this time.
So this week, we're going to Oxfordshire here in the UK. And we're talking about Wychrud Brewery and their beer, Hobgoblin.
Wychrud?
Wychrud. Wychrud? Whosewood?
Yeah. Oh, God.
So, Hobgoblin is made by Wychrud Brewery.
Wychrud?
Which is also which is owned by Marston's Brewery, or Marston's Group PLC, as they're known. So they're one of the UK's leading independent brewing and pub retailing businesses. worth £1.2 billion in 2019, and they made £18 million in 2019, and they've got employ over about 14,000 people. So they're famous. If you think about Marston's, they're famous for Banks Bitter.
Yeah.
Here in the UK. If you think about Banks Bitter, you'll know Marston's. Okay, so their subsidiary, so Wychwood is one of their subsidiaries, which also will only be super relevant here in the UK, being they've got a couple others. They've got Jenny's Brewery and Ringwood Brewery, which is quite a big one here
Ringwood's
in the UK.
Massive. Ringwood's massive.
Big brewery
Ringwood's
in the UK.
Ringwood's down from Dorset, Wayne. It's very nice.
So Hobgoblin itself was created by a person named Chris Moss. We got this. And we're going to go into Hobgoblin in a bit more details. But one thing great to note is that Hobgoblin itself is a staple here in the UK. You know, you can get it in most places. And it shows in their numbers. You know, they brew 50,000 barrels a year, which is 8.2 million litres.
That's a fair old bit, isn't it?
That's a fair old chunk of cheddar.
Yeah. Talking more about the location itself. So they're called Wychwood because their brewery...
That joke is never going to get old.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. So Wychwood Forest
Wychwood?
8 miles from the brewery that is... So it's in Oxfordshire, but it's in a little market town called Witney.
Stop now.
Wait, stop.
So you've been warned.
The name Wychwood actually derives from a Saxon name for a tribe that was at that time in Saxony, that's pre-1066, called Huys. Okay, the Huys tribe.
So for anyone who's outside the UK, the Anglo-Saxons being a group from Denmark, I believe, like a trade.
So it's Denmark and North Germania.
Okay. A tribe that invaded the England at that time.
And basically, they were the first people to actually completely unify England and to make a realm of England. So, Wychwood Forest has been known for its myths and its legends.
There we go.
Okay. So, and one legend I would like to tell you about is from 1560.
1560, okay.
And this is where Amy Robb Sart, who was the wife of an earl, she mysteriously broke her neck and died. In the woods. In the Wychwood Woods.
Wychwoods?
Well, actually, it's Wychwood Forest, if we're being exact.
Oh, the Wychwood Forest. So
Wychwood Forest.
Now,
Wychwood.
What happened later was the husband was hunting and came across the ghost. He encountered...
Who?
In which woods?
The Earl of Leicester was hunting in Wychwood Forest. And on the hunting trip, he encountered his wife. His dead wife, who was a ghost.
I bet he was like, oh, hi, love. sorry, carry on.
Just let me get through it. So he encountered his dead wife, well, the ghost of his dead wife, in Wychwood Forest. And the wife declared that he would meet her in the afterlife in 2 days' time. And from that point, he fell ill and died. So from that point, everyone knows that if you meet Amy... the ghost in Wychwood Forest, you will encounter the same fate. Ooh. All this kind of mythology links to why Hobgoblin is called Hobgoblin.
Right. So for my benefit, I don't know what a Hobgoblin is. I know it's something to do with mythology. It's something to do with maybe some fairy tales, maybe a bit harsh, but stories that have been told throughout the yesteryear.
I feel I can help you guys out with what a Hobgoblin is. So I would like you to think back to high school quickly, okay? And can you remember a play I was in high school?
So I don't know if there's anything to do with the play, but I remember you being the King of the Fairies.
I was Oberon, King of the Fairies.
You look great, by the way.
And he had a helper in Midsummer Night's Dream. Can you remember the name of the helper?
Toberon?
Toberon?
Are you thinking of a Toblerone? They're very, very fashionable.
Did you just get Toblerone and Oberon together and Toberon? Can you guys remember the character Puck?
Yes, he was like some sort of he danced around.
Yeah, so he was a mischievous elf.
By the way, just to let you know, Joe did hand gestures while saying dance around, just as if he was a puppet.
So yeah, he was a mischievous elf, and that was based around the mythology of the Hobgoblin. And there are three kinds of Hobgoblin. The Blue Birches Hobgoblin, which is a shape-shifting Hobgoblin. And he's characterized as a small, hairy man who likes to play pranks.
There's quite a few people that fall into that category of Hobgoblin then.
I mean, I feel like that kind of doesn't picture what we've got on the can of the
Well, there we go, yeah, because then you've got the Robin Roundcap, which is from East Yorkshire way, and he's another very, very similar kind of description, and he would pull pranks such as kicking over the milk pail and extinguishing the fire. So those are all problems we have nowadays.
Grounded in this mythology, this eeriness. As you said, talking to your dead wife, come to you from beyond the grave, you know, aligning themselves with mystical creatures, these hobgoblins. You know, this is what we know as breweries can. And I would say that actually it's a golden beer, as they were called to, a gold, hobgoblin gold beer, 4.2%. But they do have other beers, don't they, Simo?
They're actually famous for the hobgoblins, the Hobgoblin Ruby, which is probably what is the most common hobgoblin that they would sell, which is kind of quite a rich, darker beer. It's quite heavy. It's closer to what I would say like a Guinness or a stout kind of aspect when you're drinking it. Whilst what we're drinking today, which is the Hobgoblin Gold, it's only 0.3% less APV.
But it's 4.2%.
Yes. So it's
actually not on the high side.
I feel like it still feels heavy when you drink it. It's quite much lighter than what is the norm for Hobgoblin. And I think it's more accessible maybe because of that.
So I think something we're talking about, this like kind of new range of products, what we have to talk about is the striking illustration, the kind of can design that we're having, and actually like the overhaul of the design itself, which is, you were saying, Simo, was the first time they've done a redesign in 31 years.
But it's very playful, and I think it kind of endears you to want to have a go and want to have a drink of a Hobgoblin.
I like how modern it is compared to the old imagery that they had. It's very much like a drawing.
Yes,
supposedly. It was like a very much a pencil colored in drawing. It was good. I'm not saying it wasn't a bad picture and stuff like that. But they've brought themselves into the 21st century and designed something very modern, very sleek.
I think it needed an update. The old one had more of a traditional kind of style to it, and it played on the fact that it is a very traditional beer. An ale.
So there was an agency called Butcher & Gunderson who did this redesign, and quite monumental, the first redesign in Hobgoblin's history for 31 years.
Crazy.
It's a huge, huge deal. And, you know, they said the hardest part was actually capturing this legendary Hobgoblin character, but by simplifying the brand, but by retaining this mythical associations that come around the brand, but in a more contemporary way. And I think they've done that in a good way. And as Rich said, it looked old, tired, weathered almost. Like, we didn't really quite get this hobgoblin. Don't really know what a hobgoblin is. We know it's something to do with mythology. We don't really understand what it is. But the fact that they've made this a full bleed, like the whole can is now its artboard. A, they're in cans, which I think they've always been exclusively in bottles.
Yeah.
You know, they've now got bottles that have got labels that are much broader and bigger size. I think it just brings this hobgoblin character to life.
One thing I would ask for opinion on this is the fact that with the Hobgoblin Gold, they have made the Hobgoblin yellowy, goldy in colour. Well, now, if you look at the Hobgoblin Ruby, they've actually gone red, which means they're going away from one colour for their company, which I think is actually quite interesting when you look at things like Heineken, which are completely green, and you look at Budweiser, which is always red. So it's quite interesting that they've not worried about the colour scheme, and they want to make it almost like different beers.
So in this case, they are using colour to differentiate the beers. This is a way of describing and showing the beers. The Hobgoblin itself, you know it's a Hobgoblin. You know, you might not know it's from Witchwood, you might not know it's Marston's, but you know it's a Hobgoblin beer. By using those different colours, the red, the gold, the other colours that they're using on the other products, you can clearly see it's colour cue signposting. So you can see as a consumer, 5 metres, 3 metres, 1 metre away from the beer, when you've got it all lined up on the shelf, the different colours, and you will already know, right, I can see that's red, that's going to be this darker ruby colour. Oh, that's gold, that might be their lighter, refreshinger, you know, whatever they're going to describe this gold beer as.
So it's almost a way of going, like, if you want something light, oh, that's gold. It's almost like attracting your attention straight away, and so you're not wasting your time almost.
I think it's been very cleverly that they've simplified the whole process in one way sort of thing, so you're not going to get confused, because the old label is literally you would have to read it sort of thing. It's a very clever marketing ploy. You can literally go, right, I feel gold, that's going to be something a little bit lighter, something a little bit more neutral, that's going to be maybe a bit more of an easier drink over a longer period of time. It's a very smart move from them.
As consumers, we as people, humans, we pick up things like color a lot quicker than we would text.
Yeah.
So if you're going to differentiate your products and help consumers, as we say, navigate your portfolio of products or navigate the shelf, draw the attention in, use color. It's the best possible way of doing it. You'll see all of these colors, these brands. Now, whatever, say Twinings is one for example. They have a consistent like black color that's their brand color.
Yeah.
But they use different colors to help you differentiate and navigate through their range. You know, so their Assam styled tea might be an orangey, you know, oriental kind of color, whereas their like builder's tea, as it were, might be like bright yellow, because that's what we know as being a builder's tea.
And also, like, for instance, their Red Bush range, I know, is literally red. So
that's it, exactly. Yeah.
I think what they've done to make sure they're identifiable is the huge, interesting, like, kind of fun font as well. Like, they've put their name long ways across it. Actually, it doesn't actually push the fact that it's Witchwood at all, really, except for a tiny little logo at the bottom of the can.
Well, I think they just know that the people buying Hobgoblin, they're not buying Witchwood Brewery.
Yeah.
And looking at it, it's very very mysterious.
Yeah.
This design. They've got old trees in the background, illustrations of the tree, which actually the can itself is silver underneath. I don't know if you know this. And they've just basically created no color. They've created a stencil.
Awesome.
So the silver of the tree is actually the aluminium can color underneath.
So what's your actual thoughts on the taste of the beer, boys?
This is my first time having the gold. I've had the ruby quite a few times. This is, as an aside, Hobgoblin is my dad's favorite beer.
And it's mine.
And so I've experienced Hobgoblin through, you know, that environment, and that's why I love Hobgoblin. The gold is lighter than what I'm used to with the Hobgoblin. I think it's got a way to go. It's not like a modern brewery's take on a gold or like a light pale ale. It's not a pale ale at all. I mean, they just refer to this as a gold beer, which in itself is interesting that they don't call it an ale or they call it a lager or what we're used to seeing, just descriptions for products.
They're kind of saying, you love the ruby, why not try something a little bit lighter? I don't think they're even trying to categorize this as a ruby, because obviously the ruby, I love it. I love the ruby, but I feel it is quite strong. It's quite a hefty drink whilst they're trying to appeal to more people with the gold.
So this is my first time trying a Hobgoblin, I think, since I was 18, 19 in the cricketer's pub next to McDonald's in Worcester.
Fantastic.
There's gold. I think that was genuinely the last time I tried Hobgoblin, and I wasn't sold on it then. But in my honest opinion, coming back and trying this now, that was nearly over 10 years ago sort of thing, and retrying it, I think I'm genuinely sold on it. I'm a fan. I like the taste. I think it's quite light. It's not too heavy. I haven't tried the Ruby. I will have to try those at some point. But I like the gold.
Well, it's interesting you say, because obviously this is what they're trying to do with this design rebrand. This redesign, refresh, as it were, and with these new product lines, even if they are new or they're just re-emphasizing that they have more than just the Ruby, they're trying to bring in a more contemporary, a younger audience. They're trying to capture us.
And I like that a lot, especially with their new artwork they've gone for as well. This draws me too. We drink a lot of craft ales and stuff that are coming in, and their designs on their cans.
It fits in with that.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely spot on. For me, this is a traditional brewer that's been around for a while, but they are actually coming back with something, and not just on a design point of view that's more contemporary, but on a product level is more appealing to the younger audiences. So, and by younger audience, we're talking obviously like people in their 20s, 30s. Like, we're not saying like, oh, you're 18, you should try this. That's not what they're going for. They're just trying to not have this stale, old, you know,
old fashioned
styled beer. They're playing in this field, and they say, look, we're here, we've always been here, but we are now standing up and being accounted for you should drink us, you should try us.
So one thing that they talk about a lot with their taste profiles on their website is the fact that there's a lot of fruity notes in their beer. So I'd be interested to see what your thoughts are. So for instance, with this one, it's refreshing citrus, passion fruit, and tropical fruits.
So we're back to that citrus argument again. I can't taste the citrus. I don't. Pete, a lot of brewers say this, and I think I've had maybe one or two ales in my time, beers that have. I've tasted the citrus coming through. I can't on this.
I think it goes back for me. This is like the when we did Adnams. It's got citrus cues. Mm. It's just drying my mouth out. I feel like I need a glass of water.
Yeah.
And I like this. This is a nice taste, but it's also like, oh, this is. I need something else. citrus is a hard phrase. Maybe for me, I'm associating citrus with being quite dry.
When I drink this as well, I do think it's something you drink slow. And so it takes longer, so you'd have less of these. As in, I think you've noticed, you talk about drying your mouth out. I think you wouldn't have a lot of these.
I see, like volume-wise.
Yes, right. As in, yeah. I feel like this is like, you have one or two to enjoy yourself and you're having a good time with your mates and you try something else. It's still a fairly heavier drink, especially compared to, I mean, comparing it to lager is unfair. And I know it's unfair to compare it to lager, but compared to lager, this is a heavier drink. You'd drink it slower and you'd probably have a bit more of a slower time with it.
But I think that's what goes back to what why I'm finding this so confusing, that they're calling it just a beer, a generic beer.
Like gold, yeah.
Because beer isn't a descriptor for anything outside of just, in my opinion, of anything outside just a broader category. You know, usually from you've got beer and then you have under that subcategories of lager, of stouts, of porters, of ales.
Yeah.
And then within ales, you have IPAs, double IPAs, you have pale ales, you have all the... So they're just different ways. And it is a bit confusing, I get it. But we know it now because it's been around, it's around. But just to go back and say this is a beer...
It's a gold beer, guys. Yeah.
Seems clunky to me. Maybe they're trying to own a different area and they're just saying, look, we're not giving it the descriptor overly complex. We're making this simple. They have said it's about simplicity. So then maybe they're trying to be more simple by just saying it's a beer. It's a gold beer. That's all you need to know.
I think they're just trying to make sure that you know that when you're drinking this, it's different to their Ruby, which I think is what they have been. Is it hogtied? Might be the wrong word, but they've been hogtied to this idea.
Pigeonholed.
Hobgoblin is Ruby beer, rich chocolatey, like toffee flavors, which is a really heavy drink.
It sounds heavy.
Is a heavy drink. So I think the gold is very different to that, and I think they're trying to be different. Mm. And maybe by being generic, they're avoiding, I don't know, hitting or upsetting other types of alcohol.
Well, I think they're making it clear about what they're trying to put across, which is like, it's not really about what category you put us in. We're a gold beer. Try us for that. We're Hobgoblin. We're a gold beer.
Yeah.
So as always, we'll put the links in the description for Witchwood Brewery in for their website and Hobgoblin, which is their Instagram and their Twitter as well. And of course, they're Untappd. But across the board, I think if you haven't tried and you can get hold of Hobgoblin, definitely try their gold. If you've written it off, as Rich might have done at the point with Ruby, definitely worth trying their gold. They're more lighter beers as well.
Yeah, I love it. Get involved.
And that's all we have time for this week's episode of the I'll Try That podcast. And so from me, Joe,
Rich,
and Simo,
goodbye. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram,
Twitter,
and watch us on YouTube.
Goodbye now. Always drink responsibly. And if you or anyone else needs some help, go to drinkaware.co.uk for more information.